Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 644. What are you up to this weekend?
This weekend, just working, just finished
doing. Are you done yet?
No, it's just we're just still trying.
Takes a long time.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when I was on Web Soup, I was so used to doing like the, you know, I sat with editors and worked on the.
You mean Touch.0?
You didn't know there was another one that you hosted actually.
I don't think so.
Yeah, it was called Web Soup.
Pretty much, I'm sure I'd remember that.
No, we worked together. It was years ago. Oh, we were there actually when we started this very podcast.
Where did it air?
On G4.
What's that?
G4 was this network that was kind of like about tech stuff. You would have loved it.
Well, take me to it. Go. I don't see it on my cable box.
Oh, it's not around anymore.
That doesn't make sense. Cable channels don't just disappear.
Yeah, this one did. Mm. And it turned into Esquire Network.
Mm, sounds like a fake thing.
You know Esquire.
They make all the stuff that appeals to me as a man. It's, you know, because I'm not going to read Cosmo to figure out how to groom my eyebrows. I would read Esquire.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm only going to read Cosmo to find out the hottest sex tips around.
I'm going to read Cosmo to find out about mind-blowing orgasms and men's health to figure out how to get rock-hard abs.
Exactly. How many times can you write about abs is what I'm wondering.
How many times can you write about mind-blowing orgasms?
Fucking many times.
Mind-blowing abgasms. That's where you're...
I can make that's the name of your next album. Mind-blowing abgasms.
I can make my stomach squirt.
Yeah.
Oh, gross.
That is gross.
Chicago was fun. I just performed in Chicago.
Oh, yeah. Was that cold?
It was about 1 degree.
1 degree?
Yeah.
Why even bother?
You know, I kind of feel like saying to people in that region of the country, like, you know, there's large uninhabited parts of the United States. You could just come settle.
Yeah, but then, you know, they can't have that second city chip on their shoulder.
No. You know what? I love Chicago. It's just, love it's it. So cold. It's so cold this time of year.
And
I'm a pussy, too. I should mention that.
Chicago,
Minneapolis. I'm a weather pussy.
Did Lydia go out?
Huh?
Did Lydia go out to Chicago?
I thought you meant, did she go up and do stand-up?
Did she middle?
Yeah, she came to Chicago with me.
Nice.
Which was great, because I'm kind of showing her, like, this is what it's like to be on the road.
Lonely.
You put your luggage down. You got to pick it back up. Leave. It's too cold to do anything. Yeah. Otherwise, I'd show you Chicago.
Is that a kind of a thing where it's like, you're like, it's like, this is it. It's not exciting. It's kind of boring. I'll be doing this a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But she's like, it's great. You know, this was what's so fucking amazing about Lydia. Like, she says things that you think would just be written in movies, but she really means them. We're all going, I'm really sorry. You don't want it. And she's like, I'm just happy to be with you. And I'm like, wait, what?
You found love, Chris.
It's crazy. Yeah. How does that work?
It's very
so
nice.
So you just want to spend time with me and you don't care about what the setting is? we ate at this amazing place that CM Punk directed us to called Kuma's Corner, which is the fucking greatest burger.
It sounds familiar, yeah.
It's like on Belmont, I think, but I had the Mastodon. There, it's like a death metal themed bar.
Oh, so
burger
Mastodon,
joint.
Like the band, they had the
yes,
burger.
Yes, yeah, so all the burgers have names, and they're playing metal and the.
Nice. Is it the dogs? They have dogs in there too.
They have dogs. So the Mastodon is basically a burger with cheese and barbecue sauce and like little. Onion flakes.
Yeah,
and, it's incredible.
In Alhambra, I think, is a Grilla Mall. Grilla Mall is like another metal themed burger place where that's all themed like off of
so
metal bands. But great burgers. You'd love it.
Chicago, great. Lydia, great. Kuma's great. Now, this episode is Ted Melfi, who is promoting the Blu-ray release of St. Vincent, which is a fantastic movie. And
wait a minute. I think that's Morse code.
It's saying,
Chris, get a piece of paper.
Okay. It says, need to hang picture. Stop. Picture is slightly askew.
Wait.
Stop.
I think that's a riddle. Kyle, what's the riddle?
Picture. Moving in. Moving picture. St. Vincent on Blu-ray.
Oh my God, it's perfect. I'm actually impressed.
You're going to be a great Batman.
It's too bad we don't let you talk more.
I know.
Okay, you need to stop talking. St. Vincent, fantastic on Blu-ray. Ted Melfi, writer-director of St. Vincent. And we're going to put some very special artwork that he had wanted that didn't get used to promote the film and the posters. And so he sent us these exclusive, or maybe they're not exclusive, but he gave them to us. So go to Nerdist.com and check out the page where we put the podcast of the Nerdist episode number 644 with Ted Melfi.
Hooray. Now entering Nerdist.com.
We're just talking about John Travolta's hairline.
Yeah.
And the wonder of it.
I don't know if... I think that's a whole thing's a wig.
Yeah. That's what we've discussed. Yeah. And he just puts them on like hats.
No, he means all of John Travolta's a wig. More wig than man.
Jonah means the political party that the now dead defunct political party. He's part of it. He's trying to bring back...
Yeah. But I think it's like, you know, when I put on the Red Sox hat with the B or the one with the little socks, I think it's like just whatever I feel like that day.
But that's a
hat. What he does with his hair.
Yeah. Sort of like Mozart...
Kind of.
Well, powder wig,
except
yeah.
less
yeah,
cool
yeah.
and less talented. Yeah.
You know, no one could be offended by that. You know, that is something where you could say to someone, like, not one person could be like, hey, this guy's a less talented version of Mozart.
Right.
People are like, oh, that's
fine.
He's
fine.
A real Salieri.
I'll take a B+.
Salieri.
My favorite reference.
It's such a good reference.
Mm-hmm. I thought your favorite reference was Ellen Cleghorn.
No, it's Denitra Vance.
Denitra Vance is what it was.
How are you doing, Ted?
I am good, thank you.
I apologize. I don't normally stay up late, and then last night I went to functions. And I
Oscar functions.
Oscar functions. And I'm not a drinker. I don't drink, but I also don't
but
stay up
night,
late.
Last night, you said, fuck it?
I fucking did it, guys. No, and so it was just one of the situations.
You used your 12-year chip to open a bottle.
Yeah, that's and it actually was with it. And then the chip exploded.
Yeah.
And then it ate itself.
Yeah.
So I apologize if I don't mean to be to look tired and be sleepy. I'm not an up late person. Did you go to anything last night?
I did not. I boycotted the whole thing.
You did?
Yeah.
What do you? Oh, because of course.
No, just because I. Who cares?
Okay.
No particular reason.
Yeah, I'd never been, so I kind of wanted to just see what it was like.
The parties?
Yeah.
Which one did you go to?
We went to the Elton John one and the Vanity Fair one.
I almost went to that one.
It was fun, but you were boycotting.
Okay.
It was
no,
fun,
I went to stay home. Who cares?
You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't need any of that shit.
No.
I'm normally not very social, which is why it was a big deal, which is why I'm usually in bed by like 11 o'clock.
I'm in bed by 9.
What? Hey.
So I'm in bed by 8.
No. Matt?
I went.
I stay pretty late sometimes, guys.
You're in bed by 8?
No.
You just, okay.
Oh, I get sleepy at 8, and then I just force my way through not wanting to go to bed until 11.
Yeah, Jonah, you go to bed at 11?
Yeah, usually.
I always pegged you as like a guy who'd be up until 3 or 4 in the morning.
No.
Just listening to indie records.
No. I love it. Love sleeping.
What about, are you a morning guy?
I'm up at 5:30.
Do you have kids?
Yeah.
Okay.
2.
Is that the reason?
That's not the reason. I'm up before them.
You should just go into their rooms and bounce on their bed.
I just wake them up.
Wake them up.
Make them really aggravated.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Fuck
you, you ruined the first year of my life. First year of your life.
No. This is what it's like. Yeah. This is what it's like. So now your kids are morning people.
Yeah, it's... No. No. They wake up right before school.
Do you write when you get up, or do you just...
Sometimes.
Or is it just... You just like the quiet twilight hours...
You really want to know what I do?
I would love to know what you do.
I meditate for half an hour.
Okay. That's fantastic.
Then I ride my bike for half an hour.
Fantastic again.
Do you ride a bicycle outside or do
stationary
you
stationary bike?
Yeah. Okay.
But I go places in my mind.
You should just do the meditating in that at the same time. You go anywhere.
I should just kill two fucking birds with one stone.
A bike ride within
yourself.
I get
up at 6 instead of 5:30.
Exactly. There you go.
You should envision yourself.
Damn it.
You should envision yourself as Pee-wee on the bike,
right.
Winning the Tour de France.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
I actually just saw St. Vincent over the weekend. It's fucking great. It's great.
Thank you, man.
Yeah, it's good.
Are we recording right now?
We've been recording.
She's a silent killer, that one.
Oh, Katie?
She's just looking at John Travolta's hairline.
You know, actually, I think that would be your next meditative bike ride, is just riding the perimeter of his hairline, like all the way around.
One might get lost.
Yeah. Also, there's a
because the hairline changes.
Sometimes it's a long ride, sometimes it's a short
ride. Sometimes nothing there.
Yeah. If you're gonna just put on a wig, though, like, why not like crazy mohawk or something with spikes
in it?
Well,
I mean, he does, like, not to make this about John Travolta's hair, but he does do that. Like, he does go with the super short one, and then days later, it's the long one.
Why do you think he was touching so many people in the Oscars?
I think he was trying to...
Why not?
He's got a plane. He can probably fly them places.
He can land that fucking plane.
He can touch who he wants to touch.
Did you watch the Oscars at all?
Pieces.
Yeah. I didn't really, because I was at work in between the parties. But
pieces of it.
So I missed all of it. It just feels like a tense environment.
It doesn't feel warm.
No. It doesn't feel warm. But my guess is that probably, you know, it's the audience is probably a good percentage is tense actors, and then a bunch of seat fillers who fucking knows what their deal is.
I've sat at a table with several seat fillers before. It's awkward.
Do you talk to them?
Because they sit down and you go, I think I know them. No, I don't know them. And you think for a minute you might know them, and then you look at them, and then they always just look away.
Oh, weird. Don't engage.
Because they're not supposed to engage.
I mean, it's weird. It's really
awkward.
They're essentially...
Really, and you're like, hey, yeah.
They're essentially human celebrity spackle. Like, that's their job, is to fill in the gaps
where there's a fucking ghost.
I think seat fillers should be... I think they should get, like, celebrity lookalikes.
Yeah.
But old-timey celebrities. Yeah.
Just like Charlie Fatty Chandler's Arbuckle.
Right.
Just dressed in period costume.
Right.
I mean, if you're going
to... That wouldn't stand out.
Yeah.
No, it would. That would be it should stand out. It should
that
be.
That would be amazing.
It would be amazing. I just think the...
Well, one day when we run the world, we'll change.
Yes, Greta Garbo's over there.
I mean, I just don't know why everyone has to take it so seriously. Like, there should be an element.
It's a very stiff show.
Yeah, it feels like going to like a fancy dinner when you're real young.
There's a lot of white people.
I mean,
a sea of white.
You can't get too many of them together in a
group. Sea of 60-year-old whites.
60-year-old white people. Yeah. the most fun kind.
Yeah.
Together in one pile. I did have fun though, but that was probably my social engagement event for the next several months. Like, all right, I went out.
I was very surprised when you texted me from that party. I was like, what are you doing?
How was the Elton John party?
It was great, but I had to go work in the middle of it. So I got there and sat down for dinner, and then before dinner came, I had to go work. And
what time was dinner? 9:30.
No, but I guess like, you know, 7.
Oh.
But
the party was during the Oscars?
It's a viewing party.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So they set up this dinner.
Nice.
There are two elements of it.
Is Elton there?
He is there. And so...
Serving dinner?
Sir, he's not serving... Well, Gordon Ramsay
was actually...
It was Gordon's dinner. Gordon Ramsay's did the menu. So Gordon was there kind of running around and checking all the menus
really?
And everything.
He should have yelled at him, told him the food sucked and pulled the Hell's Kitchen.
Here's
up.
How you can make this better. Yeah. That's what I do. He must love that when people do that.
I'm sure. It's a delight.
But Elton and his partner David were there, and they had this auction afterwards for the AIDS Foundation.
Did
and
you
they
bid on anything?
No, because the starting bids were like $50,000.
So did you get anything?
Did you buy anything?
Oh, no.
Chris, I've seen you on television a lot.
You're right.
Did you steal any trinkets from his house?
Did not go to his house. Yeah, that would have been the perfect time to go to his house because he was there.
Right.
Shit.
Yeah. Damn it.
Opportunity missed. Someone bid like one of the things up for. I mean, and they raised millions of dollars for his AIDS Foundation. But one of the things was just like prints and tickets to the Vanity Fair party.
Wait, you could bid on Prince?
Not Prince. Yes, you can bid on Prince.
It didn't sell. No.
That would be amazing if you could buy
a night with Prince.
And it comes in a crate. Yeah. Just open it up and it comes in
a small crate.
Yeah, with seven girls.
Fragile.
It's a purple crate.
It's a tiny crate.
That's like a
little crate. Purple crate.
That's bad. That's really.
What was the thing you were going to say?
That's awful. Yeah, that's awesome.
No, it's just people were bidding.
Awesome. Was there like piano lessons from Elton John?
There was not piano lessons from Elton John. It was like, you know, stay in a on a, like rent an island.
Was it like write a tune? Bernie Taupin will write your lyrics.
I mean, if it was like literally people were bidding $100,000, $200,000.
I would bid on something.
For thing.
No.
No.
Just and prayed I didn't get it.
Yeah.
Like a big I've done that in an auction before.
It starts at $100,000. $100,001.
Sold.
No.
I only have $1. That's not how this works. I don't put in the dollar and he puts in the $100,000. I just add on whatever he said.
I thought this was the start of the negotiation. Once I get it, I have an inspector come and check out the product.
Which, by the way, you're having to yell that. Everything you just said, you're having to yell over.
I thought this was the start.
I'm sorry.
Don't move on the next thing yet. We're still supposed to be here.
You guys take PayPal.
I should go. I really should go. Put it on the Underhills. No one?
I know the Underhills.
What is the Underhills?
That's from a Chevy. Is that Chevy Chase?
Fletch.
Yes.
God damn it.
Sorry.
That's all right.
It's been a long time since he or that movie was relevant.
It is a good one, though. What's your favorite 80s? What were your favorite movies when you were growing up? 80s movies.
John Hughes stuff was awesome.
Yeah.
Anything John
Baby's
Hughes.
Day Out.
Yeah. Even Pretty in Pink.
Pretty in Pink,
yeah,
fun.
Weird, you know, Weird Science, Ferris Bueller, Breakfast Club.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those were all
I just saw fantastic. Matthew Broderick. What was it, Saturday night? I went to the play. It's Only a Play is the name of the play.
Mm-hmm. Is it here?
Martin Short was in it. No, I was in New York. And we were just walking, and we saw that they were loading all these theaters, and we were like, oh, let's go see something. And then we just walked up to the ticket booth, and we had like fourth row orchestra to
what?
This play.
So no one's going.
So it was, no, it was full. It was full, but we somehow got those tickets. So we just went, and it was Matthew Broderick, Martin Short, F. Murray Abraham.
Salieri.
It was a great cast, but the play was so inside baseball for Broadway.
Yeah.
The biggest laugh of the evening was a Harvey Fierstein joke.
Wow.
Oh.
And then, like, another huge laugh was if you take the theater out of New York, all you're left with is Newark. It really bowled everyone over. Mm-hmm. Everyone did an admirable job acting, except Matthew Broderick, who I was like, does he want to be here? So then I read a review. I was like, let me just see what everyone else. Everyone loves the play for the most part, but there was one, I think it was Time Out New York, that said my favorite line if I've ever read in a review. It was Matthew Broderick doesn't so much perform as he is a Madame Tussauds representation of himself wheeled out with hidden speakers.
It was amazing.
You know, the guy like thought of it in the beginning of the play. He's like, I gotta fucking remember this one.
But the whole play is like about a Broadway play and like a bad review.
I gotta go write this review, but I need to go and think. I'm gonna go to the wax museum like I always do to get my thoughts together.
And then a voice comes over, we're closing in 5 minutes. Wait a minute.
It is right there. But that was, yeah, it was amazing.
So he's not gonna get a Tony nod.
For that, I don't think so. But I thought everyone else did great jobs with the materials.
It's a great cast.
It was a great cast.
I think Martin Short should host next year's Oscars.
Martin Short would be an amazing host. Yeah. He would be amazing. Why is he not hosting it?
I don't know.
He's not young enough.
Neither was Billy Crystal.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Everyone made a big point about how
Billy Crystal now, like, you know, than Billy did.
Martin Short's probably 60.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? But he's still. He's as fantastic. Funny as he's ever.
Oh, yeah.
His SNL moment was probably one of my favorite moments. Like the
he killed thing. It.
Yeah, when he was getting blown back. Just fucking so funny.
I didn't see that either. I was on a plane for that, too.
I was working for that, too. Why'd they have to have it on a Sunday?
It's also on the internet.
What's that?
Explain this to me, Joe.
I don't understand.
It's also a bunch of it's on the SNL app, which is pretty fucking rad.
Snow.
You can just like look up old sketches and they stream off of the
oh,
app.
Really?
Yeah, they got their own app.
It's great, yeah. It's not everything...
You have to pay for it?
No, it's all free.
Really?
Yeah, and then like every four sketches you watch, there's a commercial for 30 seconds.
Oh, so they're making money. Huh.
So you get to see your favorite making coffee sketch.
Yeah, that's on there.
What?
Yeah. There was like one I couldn't find. I found Super Colon Blow is on there, and Schmitz Gay is on there.
Schmitz Gay. Stuff.
Yeah, that's
is
great.
The Tom Hanks Mr. Belvedere fan club sketch on there?
I didn't look that one up. I didn't see it. And also, I was upset that I didn't see the Mimic, the Alec Baldwin sketch.
Oh yes,
where he's like the guy that can do any voice.
Like, hello, this is Mrs. Devereaux. We're at the pier.
How great was his Tony Bennett?
His Tony Bennett is amazing.
God. Yeah, it's so good.
Every time he does it, it's the best thing you've ever seen.
Oh God.
Yeah. Do they have SAC, the Strategic Air Contraceptive?
I could look all these up if you want.
All right. Of the John Hughes movies, when I was growing up, I always gravitated more toward the weird science side.
Yes.
The Breakfast Club I appreciated.
Yes.
But it was just too moody for me when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I just needed more goofy teenagers running around.
Weird Science is one of the best movies ever made.
I'm so glad that it has not been.
They'll do
it. Well, they did a TV show.
I know they did the TV show.
They'll remake it.
They will remake
eventually.
It.
Eventually.
Yeah. It's a sequel. Weirder Science. That's what it's going to be called.
Same cast.
They made Hot Tub Time Machine, too.
They did make They did.
Yeah. And no one even remembers Hot Tub Time Machine.
Well, I think it should be.
Judging from the box office, no one remembered Hot Tub Time Machine 2 was out this week.
Oh.
Guys, this is my box office minute with Matt.
Oh, my God. Give me a minute, I'll make it feel like an hour. I was like, that's why
slogan.
While we were getting ready, I was getting ready to go last night. Those fucking like pre-carpet shows are
they're maddening.
So
awkward.
Because it's people with the host. Someone at some point created this host tempo. Mm-hmm. It's a template and they all use it, and I don't know where the fuck it came from. But it sort of sounds like this.
Oh, it's a Burka Durka Urka.
Durka Urka. Yeah. And but then watching them talk about Rosamund Pike's dress, who had just had a baby, and they're like, the last time she did the SAG Awards, this dress was Gone Girl. And I'm like, why is this allowed on television?
Reese Witherspoon had a really awesome like thing she was trying to promote, like a hashtag called Ask Her More.
Yeah.
And it was all about, it's like please ask the actresses more about than just their dress.
Yeah, it was
We should spoof that, where every question is about the dress.
Yeah.
Tell us about your underwear.
No. I want to talk about the dress. But about the shoes.
The shoes are great.
Fantastic.
I'm asking you more. This is what you wanted, right?
Whose hair are you wearing? John Travolta, whose hair are you wearing?
What do you think is harder? Do you think it's harder to do that, or do you think it's harder to do the red carpet premiere interviews?
They're the same.
I don't think they're quite the same. I mean, I did a lot of the red carpet-y bullshit for G4, and I hated it. But I feel like...
Well, at least the movie premieres are about something.
That's true.
Yeah.
And
true.
Also, it's like there's not as real pressure on the movie premiere because it's done. And it's like they're not, you know...
Yeah, there's no nervousness as far as...
Yeah. There's no like win or lose. It's just like, well, here it is and we're celebrating this thing. Did you guys have a big premiere for St. Vincent?
We had a premiere in New York.
Yeah.
I hesitate to use the word big. It was premiere, New York, Ziegfeld Theater. Bill showed up.
He did show up.
Yes, he showed up.
You made. I feel like you don't know. It's like, is he going to be here, or is he going to turn up at some kid's birthday party?
You know, Sofia Coppola was. She had prepped all of Lost in Translation, the entire movie in Japan, and hadn't heard from Bill for months. And they waited at the tarmac on the day he said he would be there. Panicking, and he walks off.
So yeah,
that's how it works.
I feel like if he says he's going to do something,
if he says he's
going to
be there on a certain, he will be there. You might not hear from him for a month before, which makes you want to kill yourself, but he'll be there.
Yeah.
Oof.
Did you call the number? Is that
the 800 number?
Yes. I have it.
Yeah, he doesn't even answer Dan Aykroyd's phone calls.
No,
that's what I found out. Listen,
doesn't answer
there.
Anyone's phone calls.
Yeah,
I don't know why.
I feel like Aykroyd's probably still like. Bill, there's aliens out there. I just want to tell you about it.
I don't know why. He I think he's like I don't know, like very in the moment.
Right.
And if something like he listens to something and goes, "Oh, I'm gonna call that guy back," and he'll call.
Yeah,
right there. Yeah. So if he has to think about it too long,
that day's dead.
Yeah.
Or you know, so I don't know how it works.
How many times did you call him?
A couple dozen, probably.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah.
And there was no part of you that was worried that he was going to be like, stop calling me.
I didn't even know if it was his line. Yeah. So
just like what happened, does it just go straight to voicemail or?
It's like, you know, back on the East Coast, they used to have this thing called SkyTel voicemail, like old fucking school voicemail, where it's like you have reached SkyTel voicemail to leave a message. You can leave a message, you can send a message, you can delete a message, you can re-record a message. So it's not his voice, so you have no idea.
When you're leaving the first message and the ability to go back and delete it. And
it's fantastic.
It, like how many times did you do
that? Sometimes I would just, that's why I don't have exactly how many messages I left. Uh-huh. Because I don't know if I erased them or sent them. I'm just a bumbling idiot.
Yeah, because of course he's kind of a white whale for the podcast. Like, of course you would want Bill Murray on.
Yeah.
And I have the number. And I've rehearsed in my head all the business things I would need to get across to express why I'm calling, what it is, we're not going to murder him, all those things. But still, like, how do you do that in a way that is charming but not threatening but engage? Like, and I haven't arrived at the formula yet, and so I have not. I've had this number for months, and I still haven't done it yet. Do you have any advice?
Well, I would say don't rehearse it.
Okay.
Don't plan it.
Hey, Bill. Oh, God.
He'll feel it.
He has this bullshit meter that's so finely attuned that he'll go. I mean, at one point I told him something. One of the producers told me, you got to tell Bill that the tone of this movie lies on the pinhead and that, you know, it's got to find the proper drama and comedy. And it's got to, you know. And so during the process of shooting, somewhere week one or week two, I said, Bill, the tone of this movie lies on a pinhead. And he looks at me and goes, where the fuck did you get that one? And I had already adopted it completely as my own. I mean, it was my own. And forget it.
He totally.
Right, like a laser beam. I'm like, okay. I go, well, I got, you know, someone said it.
It definitely seems like someone that could either be the most amazing hang of all time, but if you caught him on the wrong day, that it feels like it would be like an Arctic chill would move through.
He doesn't have many bad days because he lives in the he lives in the moment, does what he wants to do when he wants to do it. So if he's not engaged, he just leaves. So before he makes you miserable or himself miserable, he'll just disengage and be done with it.
That's great.
Wow. Which is a good way to live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How long was the shoot?
37 days.
Okay.
Summer and 100 degree weather in Brooklyn.
Grief.
Oh, God. So when you're leaving, what are you saying on these messages when you're calling?
I got to tell you, I don't know exactly what I said. I didn't script anything.
So it's not on the Blu-ray?
No.
All right.
I just kind of bumbled through. I said, hi, Bill. This is Ted Melfi. You know, I'm a writer. I'm trying to get the script to you. It's a little bit about this and that. And I think, you know, I just think you would kill the part, and I just you ramble, and I go, and you say, and basically you have to be present. I say, and I'm rambling, and I know you don't think, who the fuck am I, but here's my number, that kind of thing.
And then one day your phone just rings, and it's
one day my phone rang, literally. I mean, he had read that since he had gotten the script, after he called his lawyer and said to have this guy write me a letter, so I had to write a one page Dear Bill letter.
Jesus.
It can only be one page, and I mailed him a Dear Bill letter, and he calls his lawyer back and says, okay, the letter was swell. Have him mail me the script. Mail him a script. Then my phone rings.
Wow.
Driving down the road. Ted, it's Bill Murray. I go, no, that's not. He goes, yeah, it's Bill Murray. I go, okay. He goes, who are you? And that was it.
And how, at that point, how do you contain what I'm assuming is a young fanboy who is trying not to crash the car because you're shitting your pants and sliding around on the poop in your pants.
I think he comes
into too much detail.
Yes, too much detail. Yeah,
it's getting into the threads of the seat. Yeah. And
why are
mashing.
You slipping around on it though?
What?
I mean, if he's driving in a straight line, he's not going to be slipping around on the poop.
Well, he's slipping. You know, he'd be slipping.
The poop
around.
Is coming out with such a force that it's raising him off the seat.
That's the power of Bill
thank
Murray.
You, John.
Yes,
thank you.
Yes, thank you for that. I wear a Depends, so I was all bunched up in the. What was the question?
How do you contain?
Oh, you don't contain yourself. I think he knows that everyone's a mess around him.
Okay.
And he goes out of his way to make you feel comfortable.
Oh, good.
Yes. So, I'll give you an example. Naomi Watts and him have that sex scene where she's on top of him as a pregnant Russian hooker. She's on top of him, bouncing along, and she's a nervous wreck. She has just met the man. She loves him. She loves his work. I mean, he's an icon, right? She's bouncing on top of him. Everyone's just watching this. And she's, her ears are red. She's so nervous. And I say, cut. And he looks up at her and he goes, are you seeing anyone? And she starts howling with laughter. And that's it. So he has this way of making everyone like feel comfortable and better, and that he understands that he makes people poop their pants, and he makes, you know, he knows. So when I met him, when I first met him at LAX, he said, let's go get a hamburger. And so we got In-N-Out burgers, and that, you know,
did you have to pick him up at the airport? Was that part of the?
Well, eventually he read the script and he told me let's get together and meet. And I said, oh, okay. He said, actually, that day he called me. I'm driving down the road and he said, hey, I'm in LA. I didn't know where he was. And I was shooting a commercial the next day. It was a Wednesday. He goes, hey, can you get together tomorrow and have a coffee? I said, I'd love to. I'm working tomorrow. I go, could like tomorrow night. He goes, okay, in New York. And I go, I can't get to New York tomorrow night. I have to leave. Like, you know, I can't. He said, oh, okay. He goes, how about Friday? And I go, Friday, I could get there. Friday. He goes, no, in Cannes. I said, no, I can't get to Cannes Friday. I have to leave like now. I mean, he's like, oh, okay, that's unfortunate. It's going to be a good time. I said, yeah, sure it is. And he goes, okay, I'll call you in a couple weeks. And he click. And I'm like, I just ruined my life.
What happened? You're not, you lost him. You didn't, he's not going to. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought. And he said he'd call me in a couple weeks. 3 weeks later, I'm lying in bed Memorial Day Sunday, and I get a text. Ted, it's Bill. Can you meet me at LAX in 1 hour? And I text back and I say yes. And he goes, back United baggage claim flight, blah blah blah, out of Montecito. So I drive down to fucking LAX at 9 AM in the morning. And there he comes walking down the causeway with his golf bag and goes, Ted, it's Bill. I go, yeah, I know. He goes, let's go for a drive. And we stopped and got 4 In-N-Out grilled cheeses.
Nice.
And we drove from LAX with his town car and his driver 3 hours to the Pechanga Indian Reservation casino.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great casino.
Yeah. And I had no idea where I was. And basically Mexico, almost Mexico left. Really. And we drive to this house in the middle of nowhere, the back nine on this golf course. And he has an orange grove and an avocado grove. And he goes, this is where I go to disappear. And I go, well, there's no one here. So and that's when he said yes in that car drive. So everything he does is like that. Like,
wow.
It has to fit in. And he has said this in interviews. Everything has to fit into his life.
Mm-hmm.
Then whatever it is.
You have to get yourself back from Pechanga at some point.
Then he gave the driver some money to take him back.
Oh, that's nice.
So the driver took me. So I was in the car 7 hours. And then
whatever. I guess if you wanted to at least retain some type of comfort or sanity or control over a business that is largely uncontrollable, usually, I guess adopting this idea that it just has to fit around the way I want to live my life, that I don't want to have to conform, you know, to everyone else's, because that's not fun all the time.
It's not fun, you know. It's to us that are live in a different mindset or live in a different world. Let's say, right? We look at it and go, it's frustrating. Right? You want to talk to somebody or you want to make something happen. It's frustrating when you can't fucking reach them, and you're frustrating when you. It's frustrating, but for him, and I've looked at it now in my life. You know, like my phone rings all the time, and I don't want to talk to any of these people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to talk to 25 agents who are pitching. I don't want. I mean, no offense to them, but I don't want to, right? I don't know them. They're just asking me for something,
right?
And I'm not even in a position where I can do it. It's like, so you can imagine how many people called Bill Murray for him to call for this to be his way of life, for him to say, I'm not living in L.A. I'm living in South Carolina. I'm raising my 6 children. He has 6 kids, and I don't want to live that way. And I respect and honor it. Because I want to live that way. I just can't.
Right.
I can't right now. Maybe one day I will be able to live that way. But it's admirable.
Have you talked to him since you
talked to him? Okay. Yeah. We texted just the other day. So he's a texter.
Okay.
Because he's got kids, you know, and he said he doesn't even like to talk on the phone, but he said the only way he could talk to his kids was texting because that's all they do. So he got a phone to text.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
How do you, I mean, is it hard, is it intimidating at all to get on a set with a collection of really fantastic actors? And because obviously they're looking to you to guide them. So how do you do that but be respectful to them and their positions but still maintain a firm sense of control, or do you not worry about that? How is that possible?
You know, at one point I was sitting there and I was in a scene with Bill Murray, Melissa McCarthy, Naomi Watts, and Chris O'Dowd. I mean, everyone. And you look at this and go, I have no idea what I can even say to anyone. You know, so the best thing to do is to not pretend you mm-hmm. have something to say. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, the worst thing is to come up there and go, okay, listen to this. Here's what the scene's about.
The tone rests on a pinhead.
And Bill would look at you if you said that and said, I read the scene. I know what the fucking scene's about.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not having something to be helpful with, what's the point? You have some of the best actors in the world. Shut up.
Yeah.
Just get out of the way.
Yeah. I focused on the kid.
Yeah.
I spent all my
time.
He was phenomenal.
Was so good.
I spent all my time. I'm not going to lie to you. I spent all my time in the kid. I put every ounce of energy I had into the kid because I said, I don't got to worry about Bill. I don't got to worry about Melissa or Naomi, but the kid's got to be right, because if the kid isn't every line right, the movie's dead. And so I spent every ounce of my time with the kid.
Which, you know, he wrote such an amazing line because particularly a role like that can spill into, oh, it's so precious.
Yeah.
Or but, irritating. Like, kid actors can sometimes be irritating.
He was so great.
He was great. That's the one thing I know, is because the amount of work we did together, and the kid is just a normal, everyday human being, and will stay that way, God willing. And he's just born an actor. I think you're born an actor. I think you can study and get some skills and get a little better, but I think you're actually.
But he was articulate without sounding like precocious. You know, like he was like, oh, this is clearly a smart kid, but not like, I get it.
No,
he's exactly. a little adult, and he's it didn't feel that way.
No, because we kept him as a kid. Because you know, the minute you start adding, you know, a lot of writers, like you look at Juno, which I like Juno a lot, but she sounds so smart and so ahead of her time that you sometimes go, I don't know if I buy it all the time. And still the movie worked. But you can't do that with an 11-year-old. You know, then you're just trying.
Yeah.
You know, you're making the kid. And the movie was about their journey together, not this Einstein kid that, you know, was smarter than all the adults. He already was the straight guy in the movie. He already is playing the guy who knows everything. He does. He's the only kid, the only character in that movie that doesn't become a saint.
Yeah.
Everyone else becomes a saint for other people. He is the saint. He just threw lines right through everyone. Everyone surfaces around him.
There was I don't know why I had this weird fear, but when Bill's character tells the kid to get down and go, like, palm the nose.
Yeah.
That's how Bruce Willis kills a bodyguard in The Last Boy Scout.
Right.
He fires it, like, right into his brain. And there was a brief minute of, like, is this movie about to turn really dark where this kid's going to murder someone by mistake because Bill Murray gave him, like, weird advice?
Yeah. Yeah.
Thankfully, no spoiler alert, no children are murdered. With palm strikes.
No.
in the movie. And Melissa McCarthy is fucking incredible.
Yeah.
Isn't she?
In the movie. She's
really good.
Absolutely astonishing.
I hope she gets more.
Yeah. I thought she did such a good job of remaining to be like, it's like, because like her character is like, she's funny, but like she was able to like be a funny person that was like, had like a real kind of
so real
role. Yeah.
And I think part of the challenge for, you know, like when someone explodes onto the scene as a comic superstar, which she did.
Yeah.
It's probably like, okay, well, you know, you'll be the lead role in this movie. And, you know, it's like, as opposed to being the second or third, when you can be a little more of a madcap character. And it's like, now they make that the main character. It can be tough sometimes. Mm-hmm. But then, and so you go, well, I don't know. Is that, you know, can they do other things or can they? But then seeing her in this, like she will get nominated for something
down the, yes.
At some point.
Yes. Yeah, for sure.
I told her only one thing. I said to her, I can tell her only one thing throughout the shoot.
I'm going to say one thing and never talk to me again.
I only talked to her once by text. No.
Well, so what do you think of Ted Bellamy? Oh, he said one thing to me the entire shoot.
Yeah. But I said one main thing before we started. I said, the point of you doing this and what you have told me is you want to show a different side of you. So already people are saying they know who you are. I know what I'm going to get when I watch a Melissa McCarthy movie, right? We all said that. The moment we saw Bridesmaids, and then what was the next
Tammy
one?
Tammy, and then Identity Theft.
Now we know. Okay, we're going to get a Melissa McCarthy movie. I said the only way for you to disappear is for you to say the lines exactly as written.
Oh, and don't be the one that's like, the improviser. Don't look for jokes.
I go, just say the written word. Don't add a word to it. And she goes, I got it. I understand. Because the truth is, she was able to disappear because she's not relying on herself. She's only relying on someone else's writing of someone else's character. So she can only be Maggie.
Did you find that she had, did she like slip into that easily? I mean, years and years of improv training.
Instantly.
Oh, she immediately got
instantly.
This.
First nice. Scene, instant.
Did it almost seem to relax her that she didn't have to?
That didn't have to do anything.
Oh, that's
she was
so
like
cool.
at peace, and she had just come from shooting Tammy.
Oh, fuck.
So she was in her insane comedy mode, so it clicked over like that, and she just said the lines, even in her long monologue in that that's exactly as written. Most of her words are exactly as written. There's like almost no improv in the entire movie.
That's great.
How much, I mean, it sort of seems like directing is not anything that I have any desire to ever do. It seems like your main job, though, besides steering the film and sort of being the captain is being a communicator.
That's the whole job is communicating when you're shooting a movie, most of the time the actors just forget where they are. You know, like, you know, you're doing everything out of order. The whole shoot's disjointed. And at times Bill would just start acting this way and I'd come to him. Bill was doing the scene when he sells the prescription drugs, right? He's doing that scene, and he rehearsed it, and he's doing this really comedic, kind of crazy thing with it. And I come up to him, I go, he goes, what'd you think? I go, well, you just found out your wife is losing her place, and you have not a dollar to your name, and you just robbed this from her store. It's the lowest point in your life. And he went, oh, right. Right. So that's all it is. If that's directing, that's what I did. To reminding them where they were, where they are, where they had just come from. Because the director's job is the whole picture.
Right.
And not an actor, given one scene taken out of context, will always go for the gold. And why the hell wouldn't they?
Yeah.
They don't, you know, even if they know where they were or where they're going, right? They should never really know where they're going. So you always have to cut that off.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because if you anticipate where you're going, you're now you're fucked up the whole movie.
So they really do have to. I mean, it sounds like dog sledding in a weird sort of way, where they're constantly looking back to be like, "Are we going in the right direction? Are we going in the right direction?"
Yeah, because the forward doesn't exist, right? So literally, all the actor can know. That's why acting, I think, is incredibly hard, because all that exactly exists is the present instant moment and what had happened to your rest of your life before that. The trouble is the actor knows the whole script, right? And so they start to manipulate or pepper the performance towards an art. That's not their job, right? That's a director's job to say, no, we're not peppering. You're here. You're down on your luck. You have no fucking money. You need $100 for this prescription of drugs. Case closed. End of story. That's a scene. And so that's what Bill needed here and there.
When you... Like, did you feel the need to, like, rewrite as, since you wrote, like, did you feel the need to rewrite as you were going along directing it? Or did you, like, try to just have it be what it was after you were done?
Well, you know, you work on it so long that by the time you get there, if it's not good, it's not going to get good. I mean, let's be honest, you know, how many movies do we see a year that are just not good?
Yeah.
And you think to yourself, how is that possible? I think this all the time. I watch a movie and go, how is that possible? There's so many competent people. You know, you've had a year. How do you? It's hard. It's hard. And at some point, you have to say, you have to stick to your guns and say, this is what it is. I don't know if it's going to work. Yeah. I don't know if it's right. But to keep second guessing and changing things all around the way, I don't think it works.
Yeah. And how much, when you're actually shooting the scene, do you feel like it's like, it might not be working now, but maybe I can figure this out in post?
I never thought of that.
Yeah, okay.
Because I don't think of post, because I don't think if you haven't fixed it while you're shooting it, you're not going to fix it later.
Yeah.
Well, especially a movie like this where it's not like, well, we'll just throw a special effect in and.
There was a funny line that someone said about Whitney Cummings saying, like, someone's like, there was some joke or some sketch that wasn't working, and some guy's like, we'll fix it in post. And he's just like, why don't we fix it in pre?
Yeah, you got to work it out. Bill gave me a few notes on the script, not very many, very, 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 very little. I fixed all those things right away. I gave him the script. He goes, you got it, done. And he got the set and just said the words. And when someone else would try to improv, he would say, let me tell you something. If you don't have something better to say than what's written, don't say it.
Oh,
and
shit.
So no one improvised.
Oh, fuck. Because
well, he put the fear of God in them, right? And then, you know, we did improv a little bit, you know, little things here and there, but it wasn't this free-for-all.
Mm-hmm.
Like a lot of comedy movies are, because it's not a comedy. To me, I never looked at it and said, this is a comedy. I said, this is a dramatic story about, there happen to be some funny characters in it, some funny people, but it's not really it.
I want to ask you about that, because the campaign, like the advertising for it, kind of led me to believe it
the
was...
The poster?
Yeah, yeah. And that's like, you know, that's affected a lot of stuff. Like, it's always so weird when you go, I don't think I'm going to like that movie because of what you saw in the poster or the trailer. And then you end up seeing it and you're like, oh, someone fucked it up. Someone else fucked it up. It's like, you know, someone made a great movie and then, like, it was all these other things almost kind of out of your control.
Our marketing department was like, well, we need this to appeal to blah, blah, blah. So we need
Look, I hated the poster. I fought with them about the poster for months.
What did you want the poster to be? You do?
I love to see it. Because I was just even like I was like going around on Netflix the other night and I saw there's a new design for a movie by Jeffrey Brown. As, like,
oh, isn't
Lizzie
it crazy
Kaplan.
How they do that on Netflix sometimes? They'll just not put the movie like poster on there.
It's an alternate poster for the movie Save the Date. And it's just like I was like, oh, this doesn't look like a movie I would watch. I'm lucky. I'm glad I saw it. Before I saw this poster.
I feel like they did that with, like, Jaws, and I was like, you can't change the Jaws poster.
Yeah, it's just two buddies hanging out.
Yeah,
the dock. It just looks like a raucous
Robert
boat coming
to the beach.
Oh. See, that's funny. That's great.
That's the movie.
Oh, that's a great poster.
I mean,
that's fantastic.
And this is you put that anywhere?
It's on the internet. I made this poster. I made all these posters. I made... I said, just do fucking
great.
Characters.
Character posters.
Yeah.
Just do characters.
Would you let us post any of those with the podcast?
Yes.
Okay.
That. Just character pictures.
Yes.
And do a play on Halos.
That's great.
And what they come up with, you go, I know you want to sell tickets in Des Moines. I get it, but...
Not every movie is the 40-year-old
No,
version.
It's like...
Yeah, it was just like all that... Like, I mean, that became so big, just the blank background with the floating head. Like, it's just...
like it was like... I thought I was watching like an 80s sitcom.
Yeah.
You know, like a poster for... You know, I don't know. What was that with Blair?
What, Facts of Life?
Yeah, like I felt... I was like... I hated it. And the
or
trailer...
The Exorcist?
Just, yeah.
I thought the trailer was...
The trailer was okay.
Yeah. Thanks.
The trailer was okay. But you know, you can't. There's battles you can't win.
Well, so, I think it's difficult to. I think it can be very difficult for a department that's a very sort of black and white. Things are this or they are this, and so you have this movie that it's not really a comedy. But like you said, there are funny moments. But they're, you know, the two of the lead actors are two of the biggest comedy
it's
stars.
It's disturbing how much that happens though with movies. Like last year with the fucking Edge of Tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
Live Die Repeat, whatever they're calling it now, they fucked that marketing up so bad.
The Tom Cruise movie.
They should have been like, hey, this is a fucking video game in real life. This is like a real life video game. They should have marketed it like that. They didn't market it to gamers at all. Do you know what I mean? And it just, like, the movie didn't do well, but it's a fucking great movie.
It was
movie.
A great movie.
I don't, you know, I, to their credit, it made a lot of money for them.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
I guess that's, I mean, you know, the more films, can you get to a point where you go, I have complete control over all this and you can't say anything?
I hope to and I hope not to. Because then I'm the smartest guy in the room and then we're fucked, right? Well, so, you know, there's smart people. Much smarter than me. So, but you want to be able to work on it together.
How do you know when you're making the right decision?
I guess you never really know you're making the right decision. You just have a gut. I felt that poster was the movie. I felt the thing I had done, that's the movie. So is that the best way to sell the movie? That's what I don't have the answer to.
Right.
And that's what they have the answer to. or the perceived answer to. So you have to like balance it. The fact that the rest of the cast hated the poster too should say something.
Yeah. Yeah,
right.
Melissa didn't want to sign that. Didn't want to sign off on that poster at all. You know, so there's a feeling everyone gets, and you know, you either collectively listen to that feeling or you boil, you know, you bowl everyone over and you do your own thing.
Yeah.
I don't know the answer. I hope I get to that place, but then you get to a place like I'm good friends with Paul Thomas Anderson, who is at that place.
Yeah.
And it's a dangerous place. If you think about it, because now every decision is yours, and it shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't be, because now it's, first of all, it's too much pressure. Second of all, it's not your specialty. It's not your area of expertise all the time. And without other people, you might as well just quit. I mean, filmmaking, every business, or filmmaking in particular, is the most collaborative art form there is.
Mm-hmm.
So if you lose the collaboration, forget about it. You're making movies that no one cares about, that no one wants to see. You're marketing it in a way that no one cares about. I don't know.
Though his trailers that he makes for himself are pretty great.
His trailers are fantastic. Paul's fantastic. But, you know, I don't know the marketing behind Inherent Vice, but no one went and saw Inherent Vice. Why not? I don't know.
No.
Mm. I don't know, right? I mean, but, you know, at some point you want a machine that knows what they're doing. I guess it is. I guess what it is trying to find the right team that knows, that you trust and knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
Or at least a team that's willing to collaborate. You know, here's my vision. Here's your salesy vision. Is there any way we can create an overlapping layer that where everyone?
I wonder how Tarantino does it. He seems to be able to do whatever the fuck he wants.
Yeah, but he's gotten to a place where his movies are so fucking good that you're gonna go. Yeah. I mean, you're just gonna
put his name on a poster.
You're just gonna go.
Yeah.
The rest of us, you know. I don't know.
But St. Vincent worked by word. I mean, that was a total word of mouth. Like, so many different people were like, this movie's fantastic. You have to see this movie. Like, not even it's good. Like, it was like, you have to see this movie. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
We had no money for marketing, really. You know, I mean, I would guess they spent about $8 million on marketing.
Oh, wow.
Just to give you an example.
Very small amount of money.
Yeah. The Lazarus Effect, right? Just spent $27 million.
Holy shit.
Right, so we spent $8 million. And so people are making movie. You know, it's more important to spend money and getting people to see the movie than really it is to make the movie. So if we made our movie for $15 million and they only put $8 million into people seeing it, the fact that we're close to $50 million is a testament to just people talking about it. Because if they had spent, and it's not that they didn't want to spend it. The Weinstein Company is fantastic. They just didn't have the money. I mean, they're not New Line. They're not Warner Brothers. Mm. They just don't have that money, so they can't do it. They rely on this kind of platform, slow rollout kind of thing. But who's to say if they put $20 million in, the movie wouldn't have made $150 million? It might have.
Right.
Because everyone would have known about it.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing that now with the DVD release, the tweets and everything. It's 50-fold what it was during the release of the movie, because now it's like it's now taken on its own life. I won't get paid anymore, but that's what
we've all cried to it on airplanes. I mean, at this point, it's out.
I know, that's a movie, the recent movie that I cried while not seeing on an airplane.
Oh, you cried at home.
In a theater by myself.
Yeah, it's just that one moment where he kisses his wife's hand and she pulls it away, and it's just fucking shit.
Yeah.
That is one of those where you just feel your face start to tingle. You're like, oh.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a movie. It's fake.
My mom has Alzheimer's, so it's a little bit based on
She's her, based, Sandy was based on your mom?
A little bit. No, yeah, just not based on my mom, but I used my mom as like a thought behind it. And it's funny, Bill gets to set. Bill's like one of the funniest humans, as we all know. But he gets to set, and he first meets her, the woman playing his wife, and he goes, "I didn't know I was going to be married to my aunt." And I said, "Bill, she's the exact same age as you." He's like, "Well, please."
Oh, Jesus. You know,
So he goes, "Well, at least dollar up a little." I said, "All right." Jesus. I go, "But she's dying." He goes, "Well, she can die pretty."
Oh my fuck.
You know. So he just makes everything so much fun.
Right.
He just makes everything fun. You can't find your job directing Bill is basically finding him every day. Basically, where is he?
You gotta tag him like a dolphin.
We hired a person to follow him. he could fucking ditch here in like 6 seconds. I mean, her whole job was to follow Bill Murray everywhere he went. I said, you follow him. The moment he comes out of his trailer, everywhere he goes, you follow him. That's your job. Every day. I don't know where he is. Like, why are we paying you? This
secret trap door in the trailer.
What if he has like an arsenal of like Batman's like utility belt just dropping smoke pellets?
Yeah. Yeah, he just, you know, he sees something and he goes and has fun with it. He sees a sandwich shop, he goes to a sandwich shop. He sees
whatever. How long has your mom had Alzheimer's?
She got diagnosed with it 3 years ago.
How old is she?
74.
Oh, wow.
She's young.
And did how advanced? I mean, if you want to talk about this, you don't have to, of course. But how advanced is it?
It's she can't live by herself.
Yeah.
So we had to put her in a retirement community. I don't know. You know, I don't know. It seems like it's, you know, they got some better medications now, and it seems like it's kind of leveled out. Like she's not, doesn't seem to be losing anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Knows me, knows our family, knows everything. You know, but if you met her, you might not think a thing.
Yeah.
But if she, you know, if she sat here for 5 minutes and said, and drank a water, and you said, do you want some more? She goes, oh, yeah, I'm so thirsty. I didn't have one. She'd keep drinking the water, keep drinking the water.
Oh, okay.
This is like, it's like, yeah.
Wow.
Which isn't good when you give her alcohol.
Right.
As I found out at Thanksgiving. Mom, have you had that one? No, I haven't had anyone. Mom, did you drink? No, I haven't.
Sounds like maybe she knew there.
Wasted.
I think maybe she knew. That was probably it.
I found out the hard way with liquor. But it makes for a fun Thanksgiving.
Very funny comedian, Sean Patton, has a, like, he has this bit about like his like grandmother having Alzheimer's, and he just talks about how it's like, he's like, hey, you know, I'm not going to talk about that. And then he starts trying to do another joke, and he keeps on messing it up and keep on repeating it and repeating it. And he's like, and he does it for a real long time. He's like, you know how irritated you are right now? That's what it's like living with someone with Alzheimer's.
Oh,
they can't finish a fucking joke.
Yeah.
Because he says that's what would happen. Like, his grandma would be like, did I tell you the one about it? And like, he's just like, no, please don't start this.
Yeah, my grandmother has it, but she's 93.
Oh.
And my grandfather, same on her husband who's no longer alive, had it in, he was in his 80s when he died, but she's sort of at the point where
she's 93.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, at that point, no offense, but
no,
that's
damn good. Of course.
That's damn good. Nice. You're right.
You're in good shape.
Yeah, yeah.
What the fuck do you need to remember at 93?
I thought it'd have been funny if you'd been like, at that point, fuck her, am I right?
Yeah. Well,
she's
gonna know.
Well,
there's excitement.
Yeah. But 93.
She had her time.
Yeah. She's done good.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a great life.
She did pretty well.
Yeah.
She
did pretty well.
But, you know, she is prone to taking off all of her clothes, and she doesn't. She thinks my grandfather is just somewhere, and he's not picking her up.
In a way, isn't that better? Just to, like, think that your dead husband, who you loved for so long, is just out.
No, but I think she thinks that he won't come see her.
Oh, well, then that's not
so
better.
It's bad.
Mean.
So it's just sort of this weird, like, do you keep explaining to her?
Yeah.
To have to relive it over and over again, or do you just go, well, he'll be, you know, maybe he'll be around. You know, I don't know.
I've seen my mom naked a lot lately. It's not healthy.
You don't want to?
No, she's not. She just literally, in the bathroom, leaves the door open, sleep, and you're like, Mom. You know, it's like, it's constant.
Yeah.
Like that they, I don't know what the nudity thing is, but it's
probably a part of a brain.
It's a through line. They just strip off their clothes.
That inhibition is like just,
my mom's in her 60s, so it's still fun to see her naked. Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, that's okay.
Okay, good. I just want to make sure we're all the same.
She does Pilates. So it's fine. My mom does not do Pilates.
Does not.
And therefore, it's not as fun.
Guys, neither should be fun.
Wait a minute.
Neither should be fun.
Well, come on, Jonah. I mean, you know.
The human body is a real beautiful thing.
It's nature, man. It's nature, man. Free your mind, brother. Come on, man. Are you already working on something else now?
I got a few things. I'm trying to cast a movie called The Tender Bar,
mm-hmm.
which is essentially it's a New York Times memoir from J.R. Moringer. He wrote the Andre Agassi bio.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant writer. He wrote this book called The Tender Bar about growing up on Long Island when he was a kid. And he just basically grew up white trash in a small Long Island town. And his mom worked three jobs and had cancer and no dad in the picture. And he was raised by drunks in a bar. So he's raised by drunks, literally. And he goes on to, these guys put all they can into this guy because they were smart. And the kid goes on to get into Yale and becomes a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. for the New York Times, and an alcoholic, obviously. Well, not obviously, but, you know, victim of his circumstance, of his environment. And then he goes back into the small town and just starts wasting his life away, drinking and drinking and drinking and drinking, and the drunks in this bar, one of which is his uncle, they kick him out. And it's, they call a last call on him for life. And the kid never drinks again, and that's the story.
Fuck.
It's holy kind of
shit.
Beautiful.
That's beautiful.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Good Will Hunting-esque. It's,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But it's about teenage alcoholism.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Which you don't ever think about because we were all alcoholics when we were teenagers.
Well, because you think like, oh, party, fun. Yeah,
but you just fucking drink. You don't think about it.
Yeah.
But some people become, you know, that's when they become an alcoholic, really. That's when it starts.
I am thoroughly impressed by people who at 19 or 20 or 21 go, yeah, I shouldn't drink anymore. Yeah. And they, you know, because it took, I had to live through my 20s and get into my 30s to make that realization. But when you're 20 and you still feel indestructible and you're like, no, like the fact that someone could arrive at that decision at such a young age is impressive.
He arrived at it right in his early 20s. Has not drank a drop and didn't go to AA.
And how old is he now?
He's got to be 50 by now. Mm-hmm. I'm just guessing. 50.
That sounds great. That sounds like a really rad movie.
It's great.
You're casting that.
I'm casting it now. And then I'm trying, and I have a television series on Amazon.
Oh, great.
Called The Mancinis that I'm running a pilot for.
How's it been working with Amazon?
I love Amazon.
Joe Louis?
Joe Louis and Jill Arthur. They're fantastic over there. They're actually the first people that told me, I had this, you know, this here's the story and here's the pitch. They said, slow it down. I've never heard that in my life in this town. Take your time. Take your time with the characters and just slow the whole series down. And that's the beautiful thing about Amazon and Netflix. Yeah.
Well, it's because they don't have to conform to traditional directives. And so in order to compete and make their platforms viable, they actually have to make artistic choices. They have to go, well, if people – it's difficult to get people to – find stuff on what's essentially like a crowdsourced platform, which is mostly word of mouth and sort of whatever their algorithm can plunk it on your homepage, fine. But ultimately, their goal, as smartly, is, well, we have to make the absolute best stuff possible so that people will come. It's the same. Yeah. It's the same thing that cable faced versus network television. Mm-hmm.
But
know,
in a different way, they have a luxury at Amazon and Netflix of being able to do an arc slower. Because they anticipate a binge watch.
Mm-hmm.
They anticipate someone might blow through 3 episodes at once. So when you watch those shows, you see the story arc that normally would be crammed into an episode take place over 3 episodes. So I find that to be the most interesting thing about watching those Netflix shows.
It's almost like one long movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
You write a 300-page movie, and then you just let the movie play out.
Slow arc.
Well, the dynamic of a television show, it, at least for like a network television show, is that they have to make it in such a way that they don't want people to turn it off. So they got to keep it moving, and they got to keep it's like, and it's a slight fundamental difference then.
And they're also beholden to get this A story completed by the end of the hour.
It hasn't worked.
Yeah.
Well, it used to work, but it's not working anymore.
Right.
Well, it used to work because people just didn't have a choice.
Well, now it works with procedures.
Now it doesn't work at all. So I don't know when they're going to change, but it really doesn't work at all.
Yeah, like I don't think a show like Roseanne would exist now, because it was, if you watch old episodes of Roseanne, they did those like long story arcs that would happen throughout seasons, or they would have those things where it's like, hey, my grandmother's visiting in a few weeks, and then 3 episodes later, the grandmother shows up. It's you know, people were more involved.
Or that
and
thing where Tom Arnold fucked the assistant, and then Roseanne pulled his hair plugs out of his head.
That's true. There's that one. Yeah.
Oh, that actually happened.
Do you remember there was that one time like Dan like punches a hole in the wall, and then like in the next episode like he's like drywalling, he's spackling it back up. It's just like they really had like a long game idea with that show.
They had so much more edge. What's funny is they had so much more edge.
Yeah.
Then.
Yep.
Yeah.
And the edge has been removed of network television.
Yes.
And like Sanford and Son, you watch Sanford and Son, you're like, what the fuck? Yeah. I mean, the edge is gone.
Yeah.
Even All in the Family is like, you couldn't put that on the air now.
Well, because, you know, there's been sort of a I think part of why content's been diluted is, A, now they actually, before they just automatically appealed to everyone because there were only a couple of places where you could see anything. Now they have to make the conscious decision to try to appeal to everyone, which means never offending anyone.
Yeah.
And now with having social media as well, And it's almost daily, you know, you can see fans took to Twitter because they were outraged by a thing.
Yes. Yeah.
By something that people were so outraged by that they had to. And so, you know, now the networks who are beholden to the advertisers are too afraid to do anything that's ever going to piss anyone off. And so, you know.
So television sucks.
So television kind of sucks. Yeah. Whereas, you know, something on Netflix or Amazon or at least on pay TV for HBO, it's like, if you're offended by this, don't fucking watch it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like you don't. What if your outrage was expressed by you not watching?
Yeah.
That's your decision.
You can also, out of your anger, you can cancel your subscription to HBO. You can't cancel NBC.
You can't.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But you still don't have to watch it.
No, I know. But
well,
like,
nobody is.
Yeah.
Bang!
Bam. That was a softball toss.
No, it was good, though. It was necessary.
It was a watermelon. Yeah.
So what do you, like, ultimately, what do you want? Like, what's your, like, what, when, at what point will you go, this is the thing I set out to achieve?
In my life?
Yeah.
I don't have a big want other than I want to tell stories. So I don't, if I ever complete that arc, I hope I never complete that arc.
Yeah.
I hope my arc never ends. I just want to tell stories. But mostly I want to tell stories about people. I'm not about humanity. I'm not interested I'm not interested in superheroes. I'm just not interested in it. It doesn't strike anything for me. I just want to tell stories about people that you and I know. That's all. And we used to do that all the time. And I hope they start doing it again. I think the Academy Awards this year, as much as whatever we think about it, there was some stuff in there telling, you know, Boyhood. I don't love the movie Boyhood. I love what they were doing. It's just a story about people, you know, and I hope that's what I can do for, you know, as long as they let me do it, or as long as I want to do it.
If someone came to you and said, hey, would you want to remake The Breakfast Club? Could you reboot a movie that you loved when you were young? Because I feel like there's the struggle between, I don't want to soil the thing, potentially, but also I love it so much that maybe I could take a swing at this thing.
It's up to me to save it from itself.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It depends on what it is. I mean, I wouldn't touch The Breakfast Club with a 10-foot pole, but I wrote the movie Going in Style.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember, that was in 1979.
George Burns.
And New Line's remaking it. And I said, oh, I'll do that.
Art Carney, too, right?
Art Carney, Lee Strasberg. And I said, I'll do that because no one has a reference for the old one, or like a deep reference for the old one. It was just a good movie. So I said, that's a great thing for today's time about three octogenarians that can't get a fucking break. I mean, that rings true every moment today, right? Yep. And so I said
I honestly wish that some crazy studio head would go, let's go back and remake the movies that weren't good. That's what they should do. It's like, you know, like there's some, you know, Crawl. I don't know, something is just like, let's take a swing at something that was almost amazing, but just didn't have the right whatever, and we'll try to make it good.
I think that's a better idea, right? Because it had gone through a process. Everyone really liked the script. The movie just didn't work out for some reason. That's a better idea.
Can you think of a movie that you think
God.
Like, I'm trying to think.
The trouble is you forget all of them.
The Salieri's.
Yeah, the other ones.
God, what?
Because it's like you'll find anyone.
Beat
like
Street. you can't make Beat Street.
Well, what was the movie with all the like Michael Keaton and Christopher Lloyd?
The Dream Team.
The Dream Team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Were they all mental? Were they escape mental patients?
Yeah, I remember thinking that movie was going to be the best movie.
Though
I just caught it on TV and I was just like,
Because it's sort of, it's almost like, you almost think it's like, oh, it's like a Cuckoo's Nest caper movie.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Sliver?
Sliver?
Sliver.
Sliver is Sharon Stone, that's William Baldwin.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All, came out right after Sex, Lies, and Videotape.
Yeah, it was all about the surveillance. And, yeah. Yeah, that'd be a fun one. That'd be fun.
Be fun to remake.
Time Cop.
Yeah.
Time Cop, sure.
You can't do Time Cop anymore because Ron Silver's dead and you can't, you know.
Hot Tub Time Machine.
Top of the Time Machine.
Wait a minute.
You are
Wait
in luck.
Wait a minute. Three is coming out.
We got to reboot us, guys.
Yeah.
These guys are old.
I thought you said rebootist.
We got to rebootist.
Rebootist.
We got to bring a lot more Zen ideas
into. We're going to take old movies and then make them about meditation. Which
why not?
Is something
that's that a Harold Ramis thing. A lot of his movies have Buddhist.
They're making Ghostbusters.
They are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but a different Ghostbusters.
But I talked to Paul Feig was on Talking Dead last night, and I talked to Paul for about 30 minutes about it, and I am confident that he's going to do something good with it.
I'm sure.
I don't disagree.
Good talent.
I don't disagree.
Good talent.
Oh, Ski Patrol. There you go.
Ski Patrol.
I guess they kind
hot
of
dog are, the movie.
Hot dog.
Or to make something really bad would be great.
So to take like The Godfather and
just
make,
fucking ruin it. Oh. Make it so bad that it becomes a cult classic.
Yeah. Here you go, Tommy Wiseau. Remake Star Wars.
Oh my God! Get that guy.
I am $20 million intrigued
right
by
now.
That idea.
I did not blow it up. I did not blow Alderaan up. Oh, hi, Luke.
You know what you're just describing? You're just describing YouTube. Like, you're basically just describing
exactly.
The internet.
Yeah.
That's exactly what the internet is.
Sweeting movies?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, great, man. I know. So the Blu-ray comes out the 17th of March. Is that right?
It's out.
It's out.
17th of February.
Yeah.
What year is this?
The Blu-ray and DVD and HD is out now. Digital downloads out.
Yeah, so I have the Blu-ray, which basically gives you the option to get like an ultraviolet, like to download the movie and put it on ultraviolet, which is a basically an online archive of all of the films that you buy digitally. You can go into.
Nice.
So yeah,
I don't have that.
It's good. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I hope are you happy with the movie?
I'm happy with the movie.
Good.
I the Weinstein Company let me make exactly the movie I wanted to make.
I can't ask for more than that.
No. That was great.
And I'm sure, do you get caught up in any of the, even though you didn't watch the Oscars, did you get caught up in any, like, I wonder if we're gonna, or fuck.
I didn't think about it until we got a Golden Globe nomination. I was like, oh, I guess that, I don't know, I didn't think about it.
Did you go?
Yeah, I went to the Golden Globe.
That's where he was talking to the Seafillers at the table.
Oh, that's right. That's the reason. Yeah.
Well, it's funny. Amy Poehler has a whole thing in her book about it's like when it comes to awards, it's like you know pudding exists and you know it's fine, but then someone's like, it's like, hey, you might get some pudding. You're like, well, fuck yeah, pudding sounds great. I'd love to get some pudding. Everyone's saying like, yeah, you should really want that pudding. Yeah, fucking, let's get this pudding going on. Oh, the pudding goes to someone else. Fuck that. I wanted that pudding.
Yeah.
You're like, you didn't want it a moment ago. Yeah, but now I'm into
now
it.
Now that I lost, know about
yeah,
the
now that no one lost the pudding.
Yeah.
Now I'm mad about the pudding.
Yeah.
Do you want some pudding now? It's too late.
Too late.
Bill thinks award season is a plague. That's what he calls it. No, he calls it a disease. Oh. Award season is a disease.
It is kind of an emotional disease.
It's a disease.
It infects every thing and every one. It's a good distraction, though, I guess.
Before we all die?
Yeah,
sure.
In a way. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, basically, all day long, there's horrible atrocities going on in the world. And then just for a minute to be like, I wonder where that dress came from.
Yeah, the Golden Globe, you know, it's kind of like, look, I was happy to be there, but the whole thing's kind of a little bit gross.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
Yeah.
It's a gross, you know.
Just because everyone's, is it like the vying for attention or
it's just
the look at me?
Gross kind of, you know, here we have people getting beheaded and, you know, people can't eat and we're sitting there, you know, $1,000 a ticket, eating little fucking food in billion-dollar dresses, and it just feels gross to me.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's funny.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'll get used to it, but I don't.
It's weird. It's every interview now of like people. It's like everyone seems to try and justify the awards now. Now that like awards are like so made fun of all the time, it's like, you know, it's a chance for all of us to. It's not, you know, we're always. It's like everyone's always trying to justify the fact that it's happening and they're there and make it seem it's like not a big deal.
But well, I wonder if we're going to run into Ted next year. He's going to pull up in like a Porsche.
Yeah.
Just like have some Raymond. What's up, bros?
I got to get hair plugs.
Yeah.
Total.
And where's the Travolta's guy?
He's directing Entourage 2.
No, I'm not ungrateful for it. I just, you know, you just feel a sense of, you feel dirty after you go. I can't say you feel. I felt dirty.
Yeah.
Going after that. I felt like, I don't know.
Well, I don't think I'm in any danger of going to that, so I think...
no one does, Chris.
But then I went to the Critics' Choice Awards, and I didn't feel that. It was very relaxed, so I guess it's part of whatever the event is.
Yeah, I guess it's just the people throwing the party.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know. And it's also with the Golden Globes, nobody cares what anyone's saying. Everyone's drunk in the bar, in the back room, screaming. And you can't even hear what the person who just won the award is pouring their heart out, and nobody cares.
Yeah, that's what I heard when someone had like a clip online of like the room tone, or like the actual what it sounds like when you're in the room. And it's just, you just hear plates talking, no, and glasses clinking.
And literally, you can't hear
You
that.
Can't hear anything. Yeah, the sound system's not good.
That makes you kind of feel disturbed.
Yeah,
but I thought Amy and Tina were fantastic.
They were great. Yeah, yeah.
The Academy Awards is not like that. It's a very proper, you know, quiet, respectful kind of thing. But.
Sit, listen.
Yeah.
Hey, is it crazy that Lego Movie wasn't nominated for Best Animated Meme?
It really is crazy. Yeah. It really is crazy that it was it.
Who were the nominees? Box Trolls.
Box Trolls.
Big Hero 6.
Big Heroes, yeah.
How to Train Your Dragon 2.
How to Train Your Dragon 2.
See,
there was
anything with a 2, instantly out.
And there were two movies. One that I think was... And then was there a Japanese?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. So...
Well, Big Hero 6 was great. Box Trolls was not better than Lego Movie.
No.
No. It was a good movie, but it's not better than Lego Movie.
Yeah. Yeah, Lego Movie was pretty spectacular. I don't know.
Also, there was that... what was that? Guillermo del Toro.
Book of Life.
Oh, Book of Life.
Yeah, Book of Life.
That got nominated?
No, it shouldn't. It should have, but it didn't. Yeah.
Yeah. Boycott. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Like, all those things are politicized.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing, is hearing, you know... No matter how, like, when you see the actors, be like, oh, I mean, I can't even believe that it's been it. But it's just like the months of campaigning. Like, it's a very orchestrated
campaign.
Yeah.
If you don't play the game, you don't play the game.
That apparently, you know, I guess they throw parties. Like, you have to throw parties and spend a ton of money. It's basically like a political campaign.
Yeah.
Spend a ton of money and, you know.
And that doesn't work out. It's just. Right? It has not worked out once in history.
It feels weird. It just feels weird. But, you know, I guess as long as you get to keep doing the kind of stuff that you want to do, and, you know, like if those opportunities come along, fine. And if not,
fine.
Then it doesn't really,
it's fine.
It doesn't really matter.
Yeah. I rented my tux from Men's Warehouse.
Perfect.
I was all in for $240.
I guarantee it.
Including the socks.
Nice. What?
And I got to keep,
George,
no, I got to keep
the socks.
They give you the socks. They're our guy.
You would
awful.
Hope you would keep the socks.
But that's all. For me, it was like I picked it up on Saturday, returned it on Tuesday, and went done deal.
Perfect.
My wife was tortured for 4 weeks. With, so it's fine.
Well, it's good to see you, man.
Good to see you. Thanks for having me.
But come back when you make the next movie.
I will.
Please.
It's been fun. Yeah.
Please do. When do you think that's going to happen?
Hope very soon.
Okay.
This year.
All right.
I should start in the summer.
Sweet. In Long Island again.
Yeah.
You're going to be over there in August again?
At least it's on the island.
Cool. All right. Enjoy your burrito, everyone.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks so much, man.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Behind every successful business is a story, and some of them might surprise you. Like how Chobani's first yogurt factory was discovered on a piece of junk mail, or how the founder of the multi-million dollar cosmetics brand Drunk Elephant was told by everyone, including her own mother, that the name sounded like a dive bar. I'm Guy Raz, and on my show How I Built This, I talk to founders behind the world's biggest companies and brands to learn the real stories of how they built them. In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt and failure and talk about how they were able to overcome them on their way to the top. How I Built This is like a masterclass in innovation and creativity, a how-to guide for navigating life's challenges from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to How I Built This early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.